This is the Cosmetic Courses podcast. In today's episode, Adrian Richards and Ron Myers of the Consulting Rooms conclude their discussion on social media and the cosmetic industry.
Well, can we move on to Twitter? That's probably the... Yeah. Just tell us what Twitter is for anyone who hasn't heard.
Well, it's kind of, I guess they call it, technically it's a microblog. So you've got 140 characters in order to convey something.
Yeah.
in a tweet, basically. So you are quite compressed in terms of what you can actually get across. And for a lot of people, what they will do is to probably put smaller information or a link in to more information, or use it as a way of potentially having a dialogue with a number of people who are interested in a certain topic and discussing or debating something.
Yeah.
But what a lot of people do is basically use Twitter and Facebook as I will call information disseminating tools for a blog.
Yeah.
And for me, that's the key. I think if you're looking about content information in our marketplace, really you're looking at having a voice and saying, look, I know and understand this, and I'm a specialist in terms of what I do. I think that blog is still the central hub for that.
Yeah.
And then you're looking at feeding that blog, those blog posts into Facebook and Twitter to disseminate out potentially to a wider audience to bring people back into the blog.
Yeah. So you tweet out a link, that link then links to your wherever your blog or your
to a new blog post or whatever. Yeah. Or of course, to other people who've got other information that you think is useful that you like and you think is related to the type of audience that's following you.
Yeah. And a rule I heard with Twitter is you've got to be sort of generous. So the 80-20 rule, which is basically 80% of your tweets should be, retweets of other people's stuff or shouldn't be promotional. And only 20% should be, look at our blog or all the ways. So it's building up trust and community, really.
Absolutely, yeah. It's building up, because otherwise if you're just trying to tell people how great you are, then they'll soon, signal that. You've got to be able to contribute, I think, with comment, debates, information that you're pointing towards to other people as well, who you think have got, something that you feel is particularly, useful from an information perspective. But the interesting thing is when we did a little bit of research on this as well, was looking at people who set up Twitter accounts under a clinic name versus under their own name as a doctor.
Yeah.
And when you look at the clinic names, it was interesting. We saw particular clinic that probably the majority of the 400 people following them were actually industry other clinics.
Yeah.
See what I mean? But under his own name, there were a lot of people there from a beauty journalism perspective who were following.
Right.
So I would say that probably Twitter, if you're going to use it and get involved, you might be better doing it under your own name rather than a corporate name.
Yes.
Because I think really at the end of the day, what you're trying to do there, and I think especially really with journalists and editors and people who are really involved in looking at the trying to be first or trying to get a network of people there where they can get information and news stories and access to information quickly, I think Twitter is probably a good place to be if you've got the capability and the ability to be able to respond quickly to inquiries. And I think you'll pick up things from journalists and people there a lot quicker than you might do through Facebook or other routes.
Okay, so Twitter, you need to decide whether you're going to be a company, whether you're going to be you. You probably need to tweet pretty regularly, 2 to 3 times a day.
Absolutely.
You need to decide who you want your audience to be. Is it going to be predominantly for journalists? Is it going to be for potential patients? Who's it going to be for? And aim it towards that, really.
Again, looking at it and looking at the profiles as well, I would say that, and you're just looking at the user base, I would say it's probably going to be more useful from a point of view of looking at gaining exposure through journalists than it's necessarily going to be to, if you like, directing consumers into your clinic.
It's almost B2B, really.
Probably more so, yeah. And LinkedIn obviously is very much more B2B as well, and that building networks of people from a supplier perspective and from a a point of view of other contacts who are involved in doing what you do, where you can share information.
Yeah, I heard someone sort of say, you know, we talked about, you know, the 80-20 rule, that said it's a bit like being at a party, Twitter. If you just sit in the kitchen telling everyone how wonderful you are, you soon aren't going to have any friends. So you need to really, you know, communicate with people, ask them about themselves, retweet their stuff, be generous, and then you'll have lots of friends in the kitchen.
That's an excellent analogy. And I think very important thing to bear in mind is, you're right as to how you're going to approach this and the type of content you're going to put on.
Brilliant. Okay, next one I'm just going to ask you about is LinkedIn. I like LinkedIn, I know you like LinkedIn as well. So tell me why you like it.
I think LinkedIn is going to become more and more important from a point of view of looking at, I think, developing a profile within the business, I would say. I'm still not entirely convinced if you're running a clinic that it's necessarily you still will get exposure there, but I think it's more of a tool to look at developing networks with suppliers.
Yeah.
And people are involved in trying to sell concepts to you as a clinic owner, but also being able to be involved and participate in closed network groups as well with, I would say, key opinion leaders and other people who are interested in particular topics or problems with certain procedures or whatever, across the world. So I think it's a very good tool for you to develop to increase your profile. And of course, some people may want to do that and say, well, look, you know, I'm trying to develop a, as we do in our clinic as well, you know, revenue through a clinical trial route.
Yeah.
So that's another easy way to be able to approach and being able to access all sorts of different people through that route and go out with potentially a concept of selling your business as a route to clinical trials.
Yeah, I mean, I'm in, you know, in LinkedIn you can join a number of groups. I'm in, you know, quite a few. The favourite one is probably with other plastic surgeons. So there's a plastic surgical group who many people I know I meet at meetings, but I wouldn't see from a meeting to a meeting. And you know, I probably wouldn't pick the phone up to them, you know, not because I don't like them, it's just because you never get around to it. But on LinkedIn, you know, daily I see their thoughts on various, you know, topics like we're developing consent forms between us and communicating via LinkedIn. So it's really good for talking to peers, I think.
I think so. And the other thing I think that will develop, excuse me, in the future as well as the recruitment aspect.
Yeah.
And so you can actually place adverts on there as well and obviously be able to get through to, you know, quite detailed profiles about people in the background.
Yeah.
And so I think both in terms of if you're looking for either another medical professional to work alongside you in your clinic who's got a certain skill set or even a clinic manager or whatever, I think that could become quite an important tool potentially as well.
So I think LinkedIn,
going through a recruitment company.
Yeah, LinkedIn I think would, I mean, if you are a professional, you know, involved in the industry, I think LinkedIn would be certainly a good place to register and have a look around.
Yeah, absolutely.
When anyone goes into LinkedIn, Ron, what are the things they should do? Should they look for groups or individuals? What should they do?
Yeah, I think like anything, like all these social media tools, unless you are contributing and commenting and being actively involved, then I don't think you're going to be as visible as you would be if you just kind of put your profile in there and then leave it. That's not the idea. The idea of social media is to interact, and it's, although it is quite interesting because, you know, when you actually look at the number of people who do actively interact with social media, it's actually a small percentage. So they've actually categorized these as well. There's if you've ever gone to something called Forrester Research,
yes,
you can type that into Google. They've come up with what they call seven consumer groups who spend time on the internet, and they comprise of what they call creators, conversationists, critics, collectors, joiners, spectators, and inactives.
Mm.
And basically 70% of people who use social media really are just either read blogs, listen to podcasts, watch video, read online forums, read customer ratings or reviews or tweets. They don't actually contribute content or comment themselves.
Yeah.
So the vast majority of people are, and you'll probably see that as well if you go onto any forum or any blog or whatever, the number of people viewing that particular item versus the number of people commenting or actually writing stuff is far, you know, far more.
Yeah.
So I would encourage people really to try and, you know, even if you're not a creator of unique content, to at least start to engage and comment.
Yeah.
Rather than just be a pure spectator.
Okay. Yeah, absolutely. No. Well, maybe spectate for a little bit so you know what the rules are and then join in gently, yeah.
Absolutely, yeah. And then just sort of, you know, just like anything, you've got to build up a bit of, I think to some people do feel a bit intimidated by some of these sites and aren't entirely sure about, as you say, the right approach and how to do this. And there are companies out there now as well that are providing solutions as well. And in fact, Flipside PR, who do the publicity for the BACD and I think the Courts Clinics as well and some other clinics, are providing a social media management route that you can pay for as well.
Yeah, and they're very active on Twitter. I see them on Twitter quite a lot.
That's it, yeah. So you can pay for that. And I think it ranges anywhere between sort of like, I think, about £150 and £500 a month, depending on the amount and frequency of content that you want on there. I can't vouch for the service in terms of how effective it is, but, you know, I'm sure that they aren't unique as well. So there are other companies out there that will be providing that service.
Yeah, but they're pretty good guys, aren't they, I think, at Flipside?
Well, one thing I would say is that they know and understand the industry, so I would hope that the type of stuff they were going to put on was going to be really relevant, and you know. But I still think a lot of this, it comes down to very much a personal approach and your own, and that's the whole idea, I think, of social media as well. People want to know more about the you, if you see what I mean.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is why I think the people that like social media are attracted, if you've got a Facebook page, you know, like to go on and kind of learn a little bit more about what's behind you rather than just looking at that, which is what websites tend to be, more the corporate approach from a marketing perspective. So they want to get more into the nitty-gritty of, you know, what do you think about on a daily basis? What are you passionate about?
Yeah.
You know, that kind of stuff. And that's, for some people, some people don't like to engage to that kind of level.
Yeah.
And I can understand that as well. And there are some people that put their hearts out on their sleeves and engage to, you know, to higher level as well. And that's the other danger as well, I think, for the people that are familiar and comfortable with social media, unlike doing it in their personal lives, that crossover into the business side of things can suddenly, so easy to do it on a mobile phone or whatever now, put something up, you know, late at night and maybe not realize what you've done.
There have been some famous examples of that, haven't there? People tweeting things they perhaps shouldn't have tweeted.
Absolutely. And, you know, it only takes, especially if you've got that type of, if you like to comment or whatever and you get a bit, emotional about a subject, it's so easy to be able to just put that on, click send, and it's gone.
Yeah.
And once it's there, you know, I mean, the number of people that can disseminate that information in a fraction of a second, it's just so dangerous.
That's right. So they say,
it stays there forever.
Yeah, so they say never send an email in anger or when you're under the influence. And I've been there myself, so and never obviously tweet anything you might regret in the morning.
But this is even worse because it could go out to thousands.
yeah, absolutely. Now, the last just channel I was going to ask you about is my favourite, probably, or certainly one of them, is YouTube and videos. Yes. Can you tell me, you know, your approach to videos in this market?
Yeah, I mean, I think there are all sorts of approaches that people have tried out there, right from some really odd videos as well that people have tried to do from a viral perspective, and Skin did a few. And they did one of tattoo removal and one on hair removal. The idea was it was kind of a bit of a jokey, funny video, but it had an offer at the end of it that was linked into Skin. And so the idea was that, you know, you had something joking, funny, and hopefully lots of people would point towards it and lots of people would see it and you get the brand out there and convert a few people. Yeah. I don't know how successful that is in our particular market.
Yeah.
Through to the, you know, people put blood and gore out there, which I think is crazy, you know, about the details of a particular procedure and just video the whole procedure, which I don't think is particularly good if you're trying to sell something. I think, you know, people who want a breast implant don't necessarily want to see all the ins and outs of exactly what's going to happen. Through to having the patient testimonial type of thing, and I think that's probably the most powerful approach. If you've got someone who can come across from a real point of view about what difference it's made to their life, and I think that's what people really want to see.
Yeah, that's right.
Rather than how great this clinic is and that kind of stuff, you know, and it's brilliant and this surgeon is fantastic or whatever. What they wanted here is the difference it's made to them, because that will probably resonate more with them as well. Because at the end of the day, people are, you know, putting themselves in their shoes and thinking, well, I felt like that.
Yes.
You know, I felt that my breasts are too small and it had a dramatic impact on my life. But now, you know, that woman's gone through that route and she can wear the dresses she wants and she's much more comfortable and confident and that kind of stuff. I think if you can get somebody who's really, really happy with you, who's happy to talk in front of a camera and just talk like that in a passionate way, can be far more valuable than any scripted clinic or video that you could ever produce.
Yeah, and cheaper.
And a lot cheaper.
Yeah.
Precisely, because you know, if you can persuade someone to sit in front of a flip cam or whatever, the only key thing that I would say with any of the camera systems is that it's not the quality of the image that's important, because most of these things now are fine, it's the quality of the sound.
Yeah.
So you would probably want to try, and if you could do, I would always recommend, I mean, most people have got a camcorder now anyway, if you've got one that you can just put a tight clip microphone on, it costs about £12.
Yeah.
You just then standardize the sound, and that's really what people want to hear, because you're crunching down the image anyway in terms of quality if it's going onto YouTube anyway, so it's not important.
Yeah, I wouldn't, and there's lots of other channels you can put your videos on, of course, you know, Vimeo, Vimeo, there's loads of them. Brilliant, Ron. Well, that's a good guide to social media. So anyone thinking of, you know, social media, I mean, they can come to you and maybe have a chat about it, can they? Or
yeah, by all means, yeah. I mean, I'm more than happy to sort of talk through the, you know, the implications of it. I would say that, I would honestly say that if people are looking at this for a start, maybe just look at it personally, get a feel for how this type of stuff works. I would agree with you. I think Facebook is a good place to start. Just look at it with friends and family for a start, get a feel for how it works, then set up a page then for your business. And then start to, you know, advertise that on your site and in your literature, start to put content up. And again, you can have your Facebook feed and even a Twitter feed as well onto the page of your site. And I will recommend, if you're going to do this, you integrate it into your site as well. So you start to think of your site as being almost like a social media hub as well.
Your Facebook site, yep.
Yeah, absolutely. Because you can take your Facebook feed. So when you put in a post on there, and it will come on the homepage or any page of your site, really, it doesn't really matter. So then that's another way, when people come to your site, they kind of see you're actively involved in Facebook, and it encourages them maybe to go and visit that and to become a fan of your page as well. The other side, I think, is a blog.
Could you just clarify that one again for me? So you put your RSS Facebook feed into your page, and what do people see on your page?
If you go onto consultingroom.com, onto the homepage, you'll see it on there. So it's just a column down the side, basically. So what it does, it's got a Facebook icon, and then it pulls out in the thin column just your most recent posts.
Okay.
Same with Twitter. So you can do the same with that as well. So it's quite a simple thing to do. If you don't, obviously, I would ask your web designer how to do it. They should be able to do it. It shouldn't be a problem at all.
Yeah.
So don't worry about the technical aspects of that. It's easy to do. I would recommend, if you're actively involved in social media, that, hey, make it visible on your website, you know.
Yeah, absolutely.
Other thing is maybe start to write a few articles, comment on blogs, on industry blogs. So you obviously run one.
Yeah.
You know, it's go and start to engage with your blog. We do one as well. Start to, you know, comment. I think LinkedIn, as you say, is another one as well. Join a few groups. Start to get a feel for actually contributing and writing.
Yeah.
And I would say, you really, you know, the best idea really from a search engine perspective as well is blogs.
Yeah.
So if you can put a blog on your site, that becomes your content hub.
Yeah.
And with our blog now as well, I'm sure you know as well, is that if you get the optimization of that right as well, is that it comes up within literally a day.
Yeah.
So some of the stuff we can get into the top part of Google within a day or two.
In the news section. So, yeah.
Absolutely, in the blog section.
It's got to be in a blog. Any tips on how you do that? I mean, I know there's a lot of plugins for WordPress and things, but...
Yeah, I mean, with WordPress, WordPress is a very good tool. So you can either have that as a standalone blog site, or you can incorporate, and I will probably recommend you incorporate WordPress actually into your site as well.
Yeah.
So it can just become another page within your site.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, everything from a search engine perspective revolves around words. So it's the title and what we call the meta title as well, the description tags and the keywords that are linked to that article that are important. But the more information that you get out there that are linked to, the type of people that you're looking at trying to bring in, the better.
Yeah.
And so it just gives you another opportunity there to be able to bring people in to your site for the types of services and business that you're operating. So obviously you want to write about the kind of stuff that you're offering from a service perspective.
Yeah.
That's the ideal.
And just to clarify what WordPress is, it's basically open source, which means it's free, a bit of software that you can get your developer to plug into your site, you brand it as your site, but then you have full access to it from your iPhone or whatever, or your computer, and then you put in pictures, videos, comments, whatever. So you basically manage it yourself.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
And it's easy to do. It's just, it's just time is the only cost, really.
Well, this is it. I mean, I think with a lot of these interfaces now, once you just get used to the architecture, then the actual putting the information is fairly easy. It's just like putting stuff in a Word document at the end of the day.
Yeah.
And a lot of this stuff you can copy and paste and literally from a Word document and put in. So it's just getting familiar with the particular architecture and where the buttons are. And, you know, it's not scary stuff. I think it's something that potentially will become more important. I think the issue with this is not, it's not just looking at attracting the people yourself from those particular platforms. It's looking at the fact that search engines are starting to look for content from all of these social media sites now. So it's not uncommon if you type in search terms for stuff to come from Twitter, Facebook, YouTube, or whatever in that first page.
Yeah.
So if you've got no content at all on any of those different platforms, you are not going to come up.
No. So right, I'm off now, Ron, to have a look at your blog, and I'm going to put a post on mine to yours. And if you could do the same, that would be great.
Absolutely, and that's all the backlinking as well also counts as well. So again, if you're getting a post, you're going to contribute on a site, try and make sure that that site allows you to put a backlink into your site. Because again, people can follow that through to your site. Both search engine spiders can, which will help with your search engine optimization, but more importantly, human beings can as well.
Yeah,
and just the comment on there.
And the anchor text, of course, on that link is very important. So the
words.
Absolutely
right.
So you want the words. Here is Ron Myers's consulting rooms post on what's that new laser, Pelavase or whatever.
Pelavase.
So if you want to appear high for Pelavase, you want that as the text for your link. Is that correct, Ron?
That's correct, yeah. So absolutely right. So the anchor text and the word is that it links through is the word that you really want looking to attract people with, rather than sort of click here.
Yes.
That goes through to the link, because the click here doesn't really mean anything from a point of view of the spiders that are following this through. They want to see the word, and then that word goes through to the relevant content that also has those words in as well.
So Google knows, basically it's a recommendation. So a link to your website or blog from somewhere else is a recommendation, and Google needs to know what the recommendation's about. That's why it needs to know, not click here, it needs to know, what you do.
Yep, absolutely.
Brilliant. Well, Ron, I've really enjoyed that, I must say, and thanks for sharing. I'm off to surf the internet and research some of the things you've mentioned in that. So thank you very much.
Thanks, Adrian.
Thanks very much for joining me today, Ron.
Thank you.